Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. If you're a fan of the BBC hit series Downton Abbey, just the sound of that theme music can send Pavlovic chills of anticipation through your body. The wildly popular series about a family of British aristocrats and their servants on a country estate just wrapped up its third season a few weeks ago, and a fourth season is set to air early next week. I'm sorry, early next year. Wow, am I like a little too eager or what? The creator of Downton Abbey, Julian Fellowes, has said that when he was asked to write the series, he was reading a book called To Marry an English Lord. The book recounts the late 19th century trend of wealthy American heiresses marrying into British society. Joining us now to discuss this period of British and American history is the co-author of To Marry an English Lord, Carol Wallace. Welcome to the show, Carol.
Thank you, Anne. I got really excited when you said next week.
I know.
Now I'm so bummed. I'm not sure how I'm going to get through this. You know, better cheer me up fast.
There's probably people in a faint right now all over the place. We'll have to get our smelling salts. You wrote To Marry an English Lord in 1989, and then it was reissued after Downton Abbey became such a success, giving readers the real-life examples behind the marriage of Robert and Cora, the Earl and Countess of Grantham. To what extent, in your opinion, does their fictional story mirror what you learned about that era?
Oh, I think it tallies pretty closely. Bear in mind that To Marry an English Lord, the book, really takes us up to the altar and a little bit beyond. And Downton Abbey, of course, has now moved well beyond the period that we're really talking about in that book. But certainly, Cora's story before the television show starts seems to tally very, very closely. And in fact, I have email correspondence with Lord Fellowes, which I refuse to delete from my phone. That's as close as I'm going to get. And I thought that Cora was very close to one of the American heiresses named Mary Leiter, who is from an Ohio family, yes, your own state, and who went to England in the 1880s. So I proposed to Fellows that maybe Cora was based on Mary Leiter, and he said, no, she's totally a composite. But she's a composite of the girls you will find in To Marry an English Lord, that's for sure.
You dedicated your part of the book to Mrs. Wharton and Mr. James, presumably authors Edith Wharton and Henry James. How did they earn this dedication?
Oh, what a great question. My co-author Gail and I had worked together in the earlier 1980s on another book you may have heard of, The Official Preppy Handbook.
I don't know. Yes, I have.
PR material, but so we wanted to write another book together. She had been the in-house editor of the Preppy Handbook. And we happened to be both reading at the same time these books by Edith Wharton and Henry James, who wrote extensively, both of them, about this phenomenon of American heiresses and English lords. And, for instance, there's a wonderful – did you ever see the TV series called The Buccaneers?
No, I didn't, but I want to now that you now that I know what one is.
Now that I exactly. It was based on Edith Wharton's last unfinished novel, and her novel, in turn, was based on the lives of three very early American heiresses, one of whom, Jenny Jerome, is the mother of Winston Churchill. So the bond is very, very close between Wharton and James and To Marry an English Lord, but we are looking at the phenomenon of the American heiress from a somewhat more sardonic angle, perhaps.
It's sardonic, but it is very informative and well done, well researched. The whole thing kicks off actually with a visit in 1860 of the Prince of Wales to New York. And this guy liked to party, and he liked how American women liked to party, or they liked how he liked how they liked how he liked to party.
You said
that his enthusiasm for them and their feelings for him would impact English society, and I guess American society as well, for the next 50 years.
Absolutely. And in fact, there's a wonderful story that Winston Churchill tells about being at a party somewhere, and apparently the then King Edward turns to Winston and says, you know, if it weren't for me, you wouldn't exist. Because Edward VII, as the Prince of Wales, was so very fond of pretty women and particularly fond of American women that he promoted their social careers. And he was such a Well, it would think about now. If Prince William liked American girls, you can bet there'd be a bunch of leggy blondes hoofing it over to London, right? Because it would set you up, sort of, you become really popular in English society, and that certainly is what happened in the last quarter of the 19th century.
Now, King Edward was a philanderer, but he didn't fool around with everybody. He liked to just promote American women.
Well, true. I mean, you know, yes. First of all, to address the fooling around with everybody, he didn't mess with women who weren't married. There's a whole code
about who you can
philander with, and we can certainly get into that, and it's very, very interesting. The American woman piece has to do partly with, the old thing about the American blonde, those looks, the American girls were really, really pretty, by and large, especially compared to English girls. They were also much more charming than English girls. They were livelier. They were more outgoing. They were often more accustomed to being with young men than English girls were. So they brought a lot of appeal into any gathering.
They weren't the upper crust of American society. However, before they were American heiresses flocking to England, they were trying to break through the corset of elite New York society. You write about the Knickerbocker way of life, which described for me the scenes in Washington Square by Henry James really well. You really fleshed out for me what the history was behind Henry James's descriptions in Washington Square.
Well, there is a kind of quiet, upper crust, lack of ostentation in that particular slice of society that I think is sometimes overlooked. It's just not as interesting, for one thing,
mm-hmm.
not as visually interesting, and it doesn't pique the imagination the way the kind of livelier nouveau riche plutocrat way of life does later on. And yet it dominates New York society pretty much from in the middle years of the 19th century and really right into the 1870s, there's this sense of we're all related, we all know to the dollar how much money everybody has, so we're just not going to talk about it. You don't need a fancy carriage. You don't need six white horses. I know what you're worth. You know what I'm worth. And we're probably related anyway because it was a very small world, too.
Yeah. My guest is Carol Wallace, co-author of To Marry an English Lord. If you have a question or comment for her, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. To Marry an English Lord was one of the inspirations for the hit BBC series Downton Abbey. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, if you have a question for the co-author, Carol Wallace. Edith Wharton herself played an interesting role in one story of the age you recall in the book.
And I can tell you really did this read this very, very carefully. There is a wonderful story, sad, the way Edith Wharton's books so often are, about her courtship by a young man named Jones. You know, you probably know this better than I do because you just read it. Am I aiming at the right story?
Yeah, she was from the upper crust. She fell in love with a guy maybe a step down, and her parents wouldn't let them. But he was a step down, but they were even actually wealthier.
Yeah.
And
it was his mother.
His mother wouldn't let him marry her,
right?
because they weren't allowed into the out of vengefulness.
Yeah, basically the grown-ups had beef with each other. Edith Wharton's parents wouldn't let Harry, I think his name was, Harry Stevens' parents play in the sandbox of New York society.
Yeah.
So Marietta Stevens basically forbade her son to pay court to Edith. And years later, Edith Wharton, you know, the writers always do get revenge. Have you noticed that?
Mm-hmm.
sooner or later, yeah. They may have to wait a while.
Uh-huh.
Edith Wharton wrote Mrs. Stevens into a book and made her a very vulgar, strident hostess who wore, I believe she called it a mahogany-colored wig. And then didn't she also have her go mad and entertain delusional...
It was the Age of Innocence, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Or no, Yeah, it was. So she wrote her in, and surely people who knew the story behind it knew what she was doing.
Yeah.
Once again, you're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher. More of this conversation with author Carol Wallace still to come. We're talking about her book, To Marry an English Lord, Tales of Wealth and Marriage, Sex and Snobbery. But first, membership director Rob Walker and news reporter Mandy Trimble are here to tell you why you should support 89.7 NPR News.
Good morning. I'm Mandy Trimble. This is the 89.7 NPR News Spring Fun Drive. We bring you the great programming you hear with listener contributions, our most important source of income. Your gift of $50 or $100 now makes a big difference as we try to raise money needed to pay for the news that you use. That's it. 89.7 NPR News counts on you. So please call 1-866-897-9678 or go online to our secure server, which is WOSU.org. And joining us now with more details on this hour's thank you gift is Rob Walker.
Once again, the number to call is 1-866-897-9678 or at WOSU.org. To Marry an English Lord, that's the book by Carol Wallace. She's Ann's guest right now, and we will send that book to you for a $120 gift or a $10 a month sustaining gift at 1-866-897-9678 or at WOSU.org. The book is the inspiration for the popular television series Downton Abbey, which aired on WOSU-TV, and season 4 will be coming up, in January of 2014. So, gotta wait a little bit. Mm-hmm. Perhaps you're a huge Downton Abbey fan? Well, this book is perfect for you. Or at $240, well, let's face it, you won't have to wait because you could relive all three seasons of Downton Abbey with your $20 a month sustaining gift or a one-time gift of $240. And we will send you Downton Abbey DVD combo, seasons 1, 2, and 3 in a box set. This is a great gift. And if you've never watched the show, think about that $20 a month sustaining gift and you can begin watching it from season 1. 1-866-897-9678 or at WOSU.org.
Perhaps you listen to All Sides with Ann Fisher often. Well, if you do, you know that Ann and her staff work hard to bring you a diverse range of topics. Today, it's about Downton Abbey, and I'm a huge fan, and Rob, he won't admit it, but he hasn't watched the show yet, so perhaps he should consider getting the DVD set, and he'll learn why the Dowager Countess Violet is such a great character, and she has some of the best one-liners on the show. So consider if a $20 a gift each month fits into your budget and catching up on Downton Abbey. So give us a call and at 1-866-897-9678 or visit WOSU.org and click the Donate Now button.
Thanks to Melissa Browning and June Wolf. You are our latest contributors to 89.7 NPR News, and both of you are, well, one of you are taking advantage of one of our nice thank you gifts this hour, and we want to send that to you. Again, at the $120 level, our gift to you is To Marry an English Lord, written by Carol Wallace, who's the guest right now on All Sides with Ann Fisher. This book helped to inspire Downton Abbey. The book is full of vivid personalities, gossip, and stories of wealth in America and England. That's a $120 contribution or a $10 a month as a sustaining member. And for a $20 a month sustaining gift, we'll be happy to offer you the Downton Abbey DVD combo. This is features seasons 1, 2, and 3 of the popular series on DVD, plus bonus material, cast interviews, and things you won't see on broadcast. That is a $20 a month sustaining gift at 1-866-897-9678 or at WOSU.org.
Has it been about a year since your last contribution to 89.7 NPR News? Well, if it has, consider renewing your support today to help keep this station on the air for another year. You'll be able to keep listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher, even if you can't or choose not to renew your support. But your annual support is what makes 89.7 NPR News worth listening to. Listener support makes 89.7 NPR News more independent and therefore more reliable. If these are qualities you appreciate in your radio station, renewing your support today will help keep them in place. And it only takes 2 minutes to do so. So go to WOSU.org or call 1-866-897-9678.
Or at WOSU.org. And we thank you very much for your investment in 89.7 NPR News and All Sides with Ann Fisher. Interesting topics and conversations. That's what you're always going to find between 10 and noon on 89.7 NPR News. And we're offering a great thank you gift this hour at the $120 level. It's the book To Marry an English Lord by Carol Wallace. And she's the guest right now with on All Sides with Ann Fisher. The book helped to inspire Downton Abbey, and the book is filled with vivid personalities, photographs, illustrations, and quotes from the era. At the $240 level, we'll be happy to offer you, as our way of saying thank you, the DVD combo seasons 1, 2, and 3 of the popular PBS series Downton Abbey. That's your gift for a $20 a month sustaining gift or a $240 annual gift at 1-866-897-9678 or at WOSU.org.
Support comes from OSU's Department of Neurology conducting a planned emergency study to see if progesterone can limit the effects of a traumatic brain injury or TBI. Details on the PROTECT study, including a community opinion survey, and how to opt out of the study are at protectiii.com.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. My guest is Carol Wallace, co-author of To Marry an English Lord, Tales of Wealth and Marriage, Sex and Snobbery. Carol, once again, thanks for joining us today.
Oh, it's my absolute pleasure. I love talking about this stuff.
We're talking about the era that led to the stories behind Downton Abbey, especially the early stories of Downton Abbey and the story of Cora, the Countess of Grantham, who is played in the show by,
Elizabeth McGovern.
I blanked. If you have any questions or comments for Carol Wallace about that era, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. I loved learning how that despite the work of Mrs. Astor and others, the problem with keeping the elite set intact in New York was that there were always more and more and richer denizens on their way to town.
True, which is, has been continually true. It is always true. There's always new money. And the new money always is much more ready to spend than the old money because they're still earning. So you get this kind of these successive waves of grandiosity, and certainly we're seeing a lot of that now in New York, and there are other places in the city, in the country as well. But boy, they really knew how to spend money in those days.
And they didn't have, they thought they figured out how to stratify society in New York by the 400, mm-hmm. which is how many people Mrs. Astor could fit into her ballroom.
Yeah, you would think if you had a number, you could like draw the line, but mm-hmm. no.
And back in England, on the other hand, they kept things organized, albeit increasingly impoverished, in another way.
Well, this is true. In England, of course, they had a legitimate court system. And in the late 19th century, it was unusual in Europe in that they had not only a court system, but they had an actual reigning monarch. So the various aristocrats had real functions in relationship to the monarch, which was not really true in the rest of Europe. So that made England the kind of blue chip aristocracy. They had them all kind of sorted and ordered, and all the various titles in the hierarchy. Everyone kind of knew what was what. When we were writing this book, mm-hmm. bought a copy of Debrett's Peerage because it's the book in which all this is laid out. And let me tell you, I pretty much wore out the binding on that thing, flipping back and forth trying to figure out what exactly is a duke and what is his relationship to an earl and what do you call the wife of the baron and all that great
stuff. And you helpfully
stuff.
Chart that out at the beginning of the book, I might add.
Well, it's really important, Anne. And I think, you know, if you're going to dive into this stuff, you just want to have the handles right, don't you think?
Right, exactly. Absolutely. Are you kidding me? And I love all of the – it's kind of like – hints, societal hints, the right and the wrong. You call it different things.
Well, there's, You know, there was so much extra information that I just, both of us, loved and found fascinating. Like, you know, when you come into someone's living room with your hat and your cane, what do you do with them? You know, I can never get enough of that stuff. So that's the material that ends up in the margins and the boxes and sidebars. And some people find that it gets in the way of the story, but I just think it's priceless.
Yeah, like the, how do you pronounce it, comme-il-faut?
Comme-il-faut, exactly.
This one says, the horses hired to bring the bridal carriages to the church are traditionally matched grays, but some families purposely use bays or chestnuts to avoid attracting undue attention from passersby.
Can you imagine having to think on that level?
No.
You know.
But it's fun to talk about.
Yes, it is fun to talk about. Exactly. And for me, no detail is too small. You know, gloves, fans, tiaras,
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about the tiaras, too, but here first, Beth in Clintonville. You're on the air, Beth.
Hi. I just had a couple questions and some comments. One of the criticisms about Downton Abbey is that some of the language is ahead of its time historically. I can think of one scene with Lady Violet when she says, put that in your hat and smoke it. I mean, I think that was closer to the 20s, but that might be too nitpicky. I'm just curious if if your guest has any comments about the people or like the Duke or Sybil helping put a girl through typing school and the servants talking about owning their own businesses, because I don't, you know, from what I've read, that's not something that they talked about. That came afterwards, curious.
Kira Wallace, what do you think? What do you make of that?
Well, for one thing, to address the language, I too have, my ears have been knocked against a couple times and thinking that perhaps some of the language seems a little bit too contemporary. But as far as those concerns about, putting whatever that cute red-haired maid through typing school, you know, that seemed a little bit.
I don't think they put her through school. Yeah. I think they just support.
That's right. Help. That's right. You're right. She just made it possible for her. Right. But I think Sybil. You know, I mean, this is fiction, right? So I think that that Fellows is. I give him a lot of license to do whatever he wants to. But in terms of particularly the servant. The servants looking around at other ways to live in the 1920s, I think that is completely appropriate. They've all been through a war. Everything changed. So many men died, and people's expectations were quite different afterward. A lot of families did have to close their houses, as we see the Granthams kind of coming to grips with the finance part of it. So I think that's completely legit. And furthermore, Fellows' job is to create drama out of conflict. So in a way, he sort of has to do that anyway.
The suffragette movement came from the middle and upper middle class, too.
In fact, it did. It came from these highly educated women who became quite restless and disappointed by the narrowness of their options. And in some respects, I don't know much about this suffragette stuff, I have to admit, but the suffragettes in England were much more radical than those in the U.S., as I understand it.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. My guest is Carol Wallace. She's co-author of To Marry an English Lord, Tales of Wealth and Marriage, Sex and Snobbery. If you have a question or comment for Carol Wallace, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Julian Fellows, the creator of Downton Abbey, calls the book marvelous and entertaining. What were the big breakthroughs in that era? Who were the vanguard? Who were the ones that broke that barrier in England?
Are we talking about American heiresses, or are we talking about in the Downton Abbey era?
In American heiresses.
Oh, okay. Strangely enough, the entire phenomenon of American heiresses marrying English aristocrats is kicked off almost by accident, and it's a lovely story. A very beautiful girl from Brooklyn named Jenny Jerome went to a ball on board a ship in August of 1872, and she met a young man named Lord Randolph Churchill. He was the second son of the Duke of Marlborough. And the two of them fell in love on the spot. Just your classic, you know, love at first sight. And they liked each other so much. They were so energized and enthusiastic about each other that they agreed they wanted to get married. And 3 days later, they were engaged to each other. Here's the problem. In those days, in that stratum of society, that's not how it was supposed to work. Marriages in the aristocracy and the upper class were more like mergers and were often, if not overtly arranged by parents, certainly heavily influenced. So when Jenny and Lord Randolph announced to their parents, their respective parents, that they were going to get engaged, that they were going to get married, everybody was just horrified. Eventually, they got it all smoothed out, and then there were two more American women who could not get past the front doors of the most fashionable houses in New York. So they figured out they would do better in Europe, partly because of Jenny's example, and they found aristocratic husbands in England. And after that, there was enough publicity about them so that girls started to read about them in the newspapers and actually got on steamships and went steaming over to England to find an aristocratic husband.
Not everybody was necessarily successful. You still had to be invited to the right parties. Now, the Europeans were more willing to do that than, you know, the Knickerbockers, but yeah. You still had to find your way there.
You still did. You had to find your way there, and you're right. You had to have the right introductions. You know, society was so formal in those days. There was no way to get to know someone if you didn't know, like, a connection somehow. So there's an heiress I'm particularly fond of whose name was Mary Leiter, and I mentioned her earlier. She's the one that I thought Cora Grantham was based on. She was from Ohio, and her father, Chicago. Her father was one of Marshall Field's business partners. And her family went to Europe a couple of times in the 1880s. And she said in a letter home to her father, "We read accounts of balls that we don't get invited to." So this is an example of two beautiful American girls, well-dressed, charming, who were kind of onlookers because they didn't have that open sesame introduction. And then finally they went back to England one more time with an introduction to a member of parliament, and Mary met the Prince of Wales, and after that it was all plain sailing. And she ended up as Lady Curzon.
614-292-8513 if you have a question for my guest, Carol Wallace, co-author of To Marry an English Lord. An issue that arose for Jenny and Randolph Churchill was that of financial independence. He brought all the glory, she brought all the money to the marriage, but by English law, would have to give it up to her husband. And her father wanted to leave her her own allowance, and that was really frowned upon.
It was really frowned upon. It's this part, the money part, is so fascinating. The way the law was set up in those days, and again, we're talking about 1874 when Jenny and Randolph married. When a woman married an Englishman of any level of society, anything that she owned became his outright. The laws changed later on, but it was highly, highly unusual for any Englishwoman to have any independent finances of her own. So Leonard Jerome, who was a stockbroker back in New York, just thought that was insane. And he wanted to make sure that his daughter was going to have some kind of financial independence, which really was quite far-sighted for him.
Mm-hmm.
And another thing that we have to make clear, Anne, is that these aristocrats do not work. That's how you know they're aristocrats. They don't have jobs. So there was no money coming in for Randolph. He lived on an allowance that came from his father and on the money that Jenny brought him in their marriage.
This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. More of my conversation with Carol Wallace, a co-author of To Marry an English Lord. But first, here's Rob Walker and Mandy Trimble to tell you about our thank you gift for this hour and to talk about why you should support 89.7 NPR News right now.
This is the 89.7 NPR News Spring Fun Drive. I'm Mandy Trimble, and as a regular listener to All Sides with Ann Fisher, you know you're always going to hear something worthwhile. Today, we're asking you to put a value on that. Your contribution is vital to 89.7 NPR News. Listener support is our most important source of income, so please help pay for your 89.7 NPR News listening by making a contribution at 1-866-897-9678. You can also give online at WOSU.org. Joining us now is Rob Walker.
Well, thanks a lot, Mandy. And again, the number to call is 1-866-897-9678 or at WOSU.org. When you pledge $120, that is a $10 a month sustaining commitment, we'll be happy to offer you as our gift to Mary an English Lord, co-written by Anne's guest today, Carol Wallace. The book helped to inspire the TV show Downton Abbey, from a lavish wedding to conflicts and controversy between the upstairs and downstairs of the house. This book has it all. $120 gift. We'll be happy to send that to you at 1-866-897-9678 or at WOSU.org. And if you consider right now a $20 a month commitment, that's a $240 one-time gift, or $20 as a sustainer. We'll be happy to offer you, as our way of saying thanks, the Downton Abbey box set DVD that's seasons 1, 2, and 3. Call us now at 1-866-897-9678 or at WOSU.org.
If All Sides with Ann Fisher is one of your favorite programs, and it likely is because you're listening, well, then now is the time to support it here on 89.7 NPR News. You can call 1-866-897-9678 or visit WOSU.org. You know, All Sides with Ann Fisher brings you interesting conversations on topics that matter to you and exposes you to new authors and new ideas. You can participate in All Sides on the phone, through email, through Facebook, even Twitter. And listeners are a part of the conversation. This is the only possible because of listener support. So give whatever amount fits into your budget, $10 a month, $20 a month. And now with the sustaining membership, it's easier than ever. So support local programming. Support All Sides with Ann Fisher. Call 1-866-897-9678 or visit WOSU.org.
Giving is simple when you choose the membership at 89.7 NPR News. We just ask you some very basic information. And for this hour, we're also asking you to maybe contribute a $10 a month commitment or $120 annually. We'll send you, as our way of saying thanks, to Mary an English Lord, co-written by Carol Wallace, who is Anne's guest right now. And at the $240 level, that is a one-time gift, but we're encouraging $20 a month as a sustainer. We'll be happy to offer you seasons 1, 2, and 3 of Downton Abbey on DVD in a box set. These are great gifts that we want you to have for your support of 89.7 NPR News. So call us or go online, 1-866-897-9678 or at WOSU.org.
What are you passionate about? Is it Downton Abbey? What are your hobbies? Well, 89.7 NPR News has you covered. You learn about a new author with an interesting story to tell on All Sides with Ann Fisher. You hear about great places to eat in Columbus during All Sides weekend. You discover new music from up-and-coming artists. You hear about outdoor adventures in Ohio and across the country. 89.7 NPR News brings you the stories and programs that connect your passions to the world around you. Join us today and become a member now. Who knows what new passion you'll help ignite? Become a member today. Visit WOSU.org or call 1-866-897-9678.
Or visit us again, as Mandy just said, at WOSU.org. We just have a couple of minutes left to remind you that you're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Interesting guests and topics are always here between 10 and noon on 89.7 NPR News. And then during membership week, we also bring in guests that maybe offer a nice little gift along with their interesting interview. And today at the $120 level, to Mary an English Lord, co-written by Carol Wallace, that's our gift to you. It's a $10 a month sustaining gift, or at $240 or a $20 a month sustaining gift, and that's what we're really encouraging. We'll send you the Downton Abbey DVD combo as a thank you gift, seasons 1, 2, and 3. 1-866-897-9678 or at WOSU.org.
You've heard us say that every dollar makes a difference, and we do mean that. Listeners have made pledges ranging from $50 to $1,000 during this membership campaign, and it all adds up to keep all sides on the air. So please consider what fits into your budget and make a contribution. Every dollar really does make a difference. $10 a month, $20 a month. Call 1-866-897-9678 or online at WOSU.org.
Support comes from Ohio State's Ross Heart Hospital, helping to build healthy hearts with the 2013 Wellness Series. Heart disease is the leading cause of death in the United States, and regular physical activity is a great way to prevent it. Details about Ohio State's Wellness Series are at go.osu.edu/series.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm talking this hour with Carol Wallace. She's co-author of To Marry an English Lord, Tales of Wealth and Marriage, Sex and Snobbery. If you have a question or comment for Carol Wallace, you can give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Janet in Pataskala, you're on the air. Welcome, Janet.
Hi. I just wanted to make one comment, and that is that I'm a British nurse, and in the late 60s, a friend of mine told me, he's a doctor, he said, I have a private patient, she's an American, and I want you to be her private nurse at her house while she's dying, and she came here and married an English lord, and I actually got to nurse her in her home. And she was extremely wealthy, quite ladylike, and I noticed that she really didn't have many British friends, but that might have been for some other reason than she was an American. But it was just interesting that I happened to nurse a lady who had done exactly what they were doing in Downton Abbey.
Hmm. Janet, what else can you tell us about her? How old was she, elderly at that point?
She wasn't very elderly. She was in her 60s.
Uh-huh.
And her husband had just died, and she had the same illness. But what was interesting was, well, I was with her 24/7. I remember having to go to Harrods to buy ground steak for her poodle. And I was living in an apartment with five other poverty-stricken nurses. And I used to take it home, and we ate it. And then I brought cheap hamburger meat back in the morning and gave it to the poodle.
Oh, Janet, you just made my day. What
oh
a great story.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I do remember that her lawyer said to me, look, the American relatives haven't seen her in years, but they're hovering, waiting for their money. And they'll be over here like crows the minute she dies. So if there's anything you want, take it. And I said, can I have a little of the canned food?
Because those were hard times in London.
Well, always for nurses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. Well, thank you so much, Janet. That's a great story.
Okay.
Take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Well, let's go to Heather right away. Heather in Columbus, you're on the air with Carol Wallace. Welcome, Heather.
Good morning. I don't think I can top Janet's story, but I can. Thanks for taking the call. I actually have more, I think, a point of interest for Ms. Wallace and perhaps listeners. I was very privileged to live and work on an old Army base, Fort Monroe, that just recently reverted back to Commonwealth control in Virginia. And it's situated right in the mouth of the Chesapeake Bay, where all that gorgeous history is, near Williamsburg.
Yeah.
Well, there's a hotel there called the Chamberlain. And the hotel had another hotel called the Hygieia that preceded it. And when I worked as a docent in the History Museum close to there, I learned that they actually marketed a marketing strategy at the turn of the century for to attract women to get their mothers, to get their daughters, to bring their families, have your dad, have your husband, bring the family here, and we will find an officer to marry your daughter off to. So the man who owned the Hygieia at the Chamberlain at that time commissioned a serial novel called The Colonel's Capitulation.
Oh,
and it was this tawdry story about the young woman who was vying for the affections of an army colonel. And in the end, of course, he capitulates and she wins. And from what I understand, it drove families there. And there are photographs in the Fort Monroe Museum there called the Casemate Museum. There are old paintings and early photographs of women walking along the seawall vying for the attention of the naval officers.
Sounds like the great basis for a novel or something, don't you think?
It is. It is. The place is stunning.
Oh, well, this is great. And, you know, actually, one of our American heiresses met her, I think it was at White Sulphur Springs. That's Virginia, right?
White Sulphur is in West Virginia.
Okay, so she met her, eventually a duke. He was a viscount when she married him. I think Consuelo Isnaga, who was married in 1876. I'm pretty sure she met Viscount Mandeville at White Sulphur Springs. And that was, so there was already this kind of pattern being set because, you know, things are a little more relaxed at the resorts, right? So you go, you take your very best clothes, you parade up and down on the seawall, as you say, and who knows what could happen. And whether it's a colonel you've got your eyes on or, you know, or a marquis, you know, sometimes it really works. But I love hearing this about the colonel's capitulation.
Thank you, Heather, for that. That's great.
Thank you.
Take care. Don't you love how I say, oh, yeah, Consuela? Like, that's how I feel after reading about these. It's like, oh, yeah, I know that person. They were just kind of normal people. But I wanted to ask you whether the Brits, particularly the women, weren't offended by the American invasion.
Oh, they totally were.
Okay.
They were completely, the American girls were eating their lunch, you know. But by the same token, there's an interesting thing is that the American girls who were accepted in high society in the U.S. did not usually go to England to find a husband. And by the same token, the English men English aristocrats whose family had plenty of money did not buy. See, there you go. Did mm-hmm. not marry American women. So that it was kind of a second string striver mentality that made those matches. The really, really rich aristocrats didn't have to marry American, and the well-accepted Americans didn't have to go across the ocean to find a husband who was going to boost their social score, as it were.
Were there any real successes that you look back? So, you know, I mean, Earl and Countess of Grantham, they eventually fell in love with each other.
Yeah. Yeah.
But was that an anomaly, or were there success stories of true love that came out of these?
The one that I like to think about is there was a woman in New York named May Golette who married in 1903 the Duke of Roxborough. And actually, when Gail and I were doing the research for this book, we went to their castle, which is in southern Scotland, just north of the border. And it was great in those days because it was still furnished as it had been once May came as Duchess. She'd brought all this furniture with her from New York. And at one point, we walked out a door onto the lawn, and there was a kind of mudroom, and there were all these dresses hanging on a rack above the gumboots that I could recognize as Worth gowns from the fabrics.
Oh, yeah.
So her stamp was still very much on that house. And apparently that was a very comfortable and productive match to the extent that some of the American heiresses who were May's friends felt that she had become too English. Part of the difficulty in these marriages is that we do speak the same language, yes, but the expectations about life and character between Americans and English people are still not exactly the same. So you have not only the regular stresses of a marriage, but you also have this kind of cultural gap to cross over, which was really difficult for a lot of them.
Americans, to a certain extent, did work to stick together in Europe and help each other.
Yeah, I think they did. I think there was a certain fellow feeling among them, yes.
They'd help each other get introduced.
Ah, that's where you're going with this, Anne.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
In fact, one of the earlier heiresses is a woman named Minnie Paget, who appears to have run more or less an introduction service. you know, we don't know exactly, the sources aren't going to tell us, but for example, she is the one who introduced Consuelo Vanderbilt, the great heiress of the day, to the young Duke of Marlborough. And there are other women who were reputed to have done more or less the same thing. They would provide access, not necessarily for cash, mm-hmm. but if you happened to send them a necklace from a jeweler's, it would not be coming back your way. Mm-hmm. You'd see it on her chest the next time. So, yeah, there was definitely that kind of helping going on. And even in a less formal way, for example, Consuelo Iznaga is Consuelo Vanderbilt's godmother, and surely that relationship has something to do with Consuelo Vanderbilt's mother's idea that Consuelo, her daughter, should marry into the English aristocracy. It's just a kind of – it's something they were all doing.
When and why did the trend finally taper off?
The trend finally tapered off around 1910, 1911, and there were a couple of big reasons for it. One, of course, is the death of Edward VII, who had promoted these matches both explicitly and kind of casually because he just liked these girls so much. His son, George V, was a very, very different kind of character, much more conservative, quiet, straight-laced, and of Queen Mary, of course, who his wife was even stricter than he. So they were not very happy with the kind of freewheeling, big-spending social splash that American heiress has brought to London. And then the other thing is that by 1910, 1911, American society has kind of grown up, and American plutocrats no longer feel that they need that kind of stamp of approval from Europe. They don't need those English aristocrats to show that they are they're cultured or worthy of being in the highest society. So those two factors started to slow things down, and then of course 1914 happens and everything shuts down. It's World War I and the whole world changes.
Carol Wallace, thanks so much for joining us today. This has been a lot of fun.
Well, Anne, I've enjoyed it very much. Thanks so much for including me.
Carol Wallace, she's co-author of To Marry an English Lord, Tales of Wealth and Marriage, Sex and Snobbery. Once again, this is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. And now with more information on how you can support our station during the spring membership drive, here's Rob Walker and Mandy Trimble.
This is the 89.7 NPR News Spring Fund Drive. Our goal is to ensure that all of the programs you value are here on 89.7 NPR News. A contribution of $50 or $100 will do just that. And now you can break that down to monthly payments of $10 a month, even $5 a month. So please call 1-866-897-9678 with your gift now. It's a gift that will keep this listener-supported nonprofit radio station on the air. Joining us now with more is Rob Walker.
Well, good morning or almost afternoon, Mandy. Thanks to everybody who's participated this hour and during our membership drive. 1,124 people, by the way, have participated in our membership drive. If you're enjoying this hour's All Sides with Ann Fisher, well, this is a great time to make your pledge of support. We have two gifts that we want you to think about. At the $120 level, we'll offer you the book, To Marry an English Lord, co-written by Anne's guest today. The book helped to inspire the TV show Downton Abbey, from lavish weddings to conflicts and controversy between the upstairs and the downstairs of the house. This book has it all. It's your gift for a $10 a month sustaining gift or a $120 one-time gift. And at the $240 level, that's a $20 a month sustainer, and we're really encouraging people to take up that $20 a month sustainer pledge. We'll send you the Downton Abbey DVD box set, all three seasons, in one convenient box, and we'll be happy to send that to you as our way of saying thanks. 1-866-897-9678 or at WOSU.org.
89.7 NPR News is dedicated to bringing you in-depth local news. We have our award-winning news team, and we have a two-hour local call-in talk show, All Sides with Ann Fisher. This programming is only possible with listener support. You hear in-depth features on the issues that impact life in Central Ohio from our news department, and you hear conversations on the topics that matter on all sides. All Sides brings you interviews with important policymakers in Ohio, and it connects you with newsmakers across the country and in your own backyard. Support that programming that keeps you connected. You can do that by calling 1-866-897-9678 or visit WOSU.org.
And we got some great volunteers ready to take your calls right now. They can walk you through the process. You know, if the Downton Abbey items or that we've been talking about today is not exactly what you want, well, talk to them because they have an entire list of thank you gifts that we're offering as well, including thank you gifts that we've been offering this past week on All Sides with Ann Fisher. So we hope that you take care of that. Our volunteers are people who've been around WOSU for a long time, and they know really the process. They'll get you in and out very quickly. And if it's more convenient for you to do it on the web, well, go to WOSU.org and click on that big banner that says Donate Now. You can't miss it, and you'll be able to make a contribution to this hour on 89.7 NPR News. The number again is 1-866-897-9678 or at WOSU.org.
We're all familiar with renewal requests. We're asked to renew subscriptions to newspapers, magazines, even the gym. 89.7 NPR News works the same way. Every year we ask you to renew your support so you will continue to hear the news you depend on, like All Sides with Ann Fisher. Sometimes we don't renew a subscription, so we no longer have, you know, we may not have time for it anymore. But if you still listen to 89.7 NPR News as you're doing right now, you know, as much as you did when you last contributed, then renewing your support today is very important. So we ask you to take a couple of minutes now to call 1-866-897-9678 or go online to WOSU.org. That's a secure server and it only takes just a couple of minutes.
1-866-897-9678 or at WOSU.org. And we have some very nice thank you gifts this hour. To Mary an English Lord, co-written by Carol Wallace. That is a $10 a month sustaining member or a one-time $120 gift. That's Anne's guest today. This book is the inspiration for the popular TV series Downton Abbey, which you've seen on WOSU TV. If you're a huge fan, well, you're going to like this book. We're going to send this out to you as our way of saying thanks. And at the $240 gift level or a sustainer gift of $20 a month, and that's what we're really encouraging. $20 a month as a sustainer, we'll offer Downton Abbey DVD combo as our way of saying thank you for this hour. 1-866-897-9678 or at WOSU.org.
Giving to 89.7 NPR News is easy. All it takes is a gift of a dollar or two a week and 2 minutes of your time. The benefits will be here all year long in the form of All Sides with Ann Fisher and all of the 89.7 NPR News programs you love. Most listeners use a credit card to give, and that's helpful because it saves 89.7 NPR News time and money. Take advantage of the sustaining giving, $10 or $20 a month. Today you can get that Downton Abbey DVD Season 1, 2, and 3 set for $20 a month. The number to call is 1-866-897-9678.
Or at WOSU.org. This is listener supported WOSU 89.7 and WOSU HD1 Columbus and streaming on the web at WOSU.org. Call or give online right now to support All Sides with Ann Fisher.